This story is one of a series of 10 stories of missing experience that are comprised from narrative interviews with adults who've been reported as missing and who have returned and who contributed to the ESRC-funded Geographies of Missing People research project. I suffer from depression and I was going through a really bad episode. Everything was a bit much. Things just got pretty over the top. And I took a huge overdose and that's what made me go missing. I sent emails out to lots of people while I was under the influence of tablets and some red wine, like my mum and some of my friends and my sister. When I realised I was still alive, it was a working night. It was in the middle of the week. People were going to start to waken up and get their emails and I thought I'm going to disappear. So I just sort of took my iPod and I left my phone at home and just decided I would go. And that was really the reason I ended up being reported missing, because I left my phone and everything at home and I didn't show up for work. I spent a lot of time vomiting. I was aware by 4 in the morning that I was alive, very much still alive, and people were going to start getting the letters, and I hadn't planned to be around. So I had to go somewhere until all the tablets did their worst, and that was my thinking. I got dressed for the weather. I don't know why, because if you think you're going to die, why do you bother? It's just a thing you do, I guess. And I wanted to be wearing dark things, so I wouldn't be easy to spot, and I'm blonde. I knew where I was going from when I left. That would have been about 4 or 5 in the morning, and I don't know why, but it was like a kind of light bulb came on. I don't know why I thought of that place, but it was perfect. It wasn't far away. I didn't think I was going to be a missing person, but I know that I didn't want to be found. I wanted to be missing for long enough for the tablets to do their job, and after that it didn't matter. I wanted to be dead, so I needed a certain amount of time for the poison to take effect, basically, so I knew I had to be well hidden. I used to run by that building, that's how I knew it. I don't know what it used to be, it's beside an old mill, like what's left of an old mill by the river. It's kind of in the bank, and there's a path that goes alongside it and then steps upwards. A lot of it's derelict now. It's full of leaves when it gets windy. It's very well hidden and you can't see it from the road or anything. It was winter, so I put an extra jumper on and a jacket. Something with a hood so I could put it over my head and sort of hide as well. It's all about hiding. I was listening to Nirvana, which is very good when you're in that kind of mess, because you know, obviously he suffered. And that's why I took the iPod with me. And I'm pretty sure the other thing I took was my house key and a bottle of wine. I could only get there by foot. I remember it was pretty quiet. I walked alongside the parked cars, so even if I did stumble, it wasn't very obvious. I was aware that if a police car was going past or even a taxi driver, someone might have spotted me and just sort of thought, there's something really not right with that girl. And that would have spoilt my plan as well. It was like being really drunk. I remember my vision. It was like everything was kind of in slow motion. I took a mixture of things, paracetamol and painkillers and sleeping tablets. You know, anything I could get my hands on. I was aware I was sort of weaving about and trying not to trip or fall or anything. My eyes. I was probably opening and closing my eyes a lot. It wouldn't have looked right. I do remember about 2 cars past me because of the headlights. I was trying even harder to stand up straight and not stumble and not look at them as well. I remember being quite focused on my walking. I was thumping my feet down. It was very deliberate. Everything was very deliberate. I remember then I was walking a bit fast, definitely, because I was nearly there and I had to sort of hold myself a little bit to stop that, especially as I got near the roundabout because it's more lit up there. There's a lot of places I could have stopped if I was struggling. I could have stopped and probably found somewhere to hide. But a lot of the buildings were being demolished and there were workmen coming about during the day and they probably would come in quite early. And I just thought of this place and I was focused on getting there. So I cut down from where I was, diagonally across the little roundabout to the path along the river. It's only a matter of a few hundred yards to that building. And even though I was struggling, I just jumped into it because I didn't really care if I hurt myself. It's about a 6-foot drop, so I just jumped down. But the wind meant that there was a lot of leaves that had built up on it, so it was quite soft in there. And I just kind of crawled into the space. put my iPod on and sat there. I didn't take my phone because I watch police programmes and they can track you with your phone, and that was on my mind. I just went right into the corner, so you would have had to put your head right in to see me. And the wall is granite, the wall was thick, so there was shelter and seclusion because that's what I wanted. I didn't want to have to face what I'd done in them emails. I just thought I was safe. And then as the daylight was coming and I was still alive, that was when I started to panic. I couldn't face drinking anymore, but I was trying. So I could maybe make the whole cocktail work, but I had like a few mouthfuls max. I just kept putting on my collection of Nirvana on repeat, listening to it all the way through and closing my eyes and just hoping they wouldn't find me. I know I was thinking about my family. I was sort of curled in a ball. I wasn't lying down, but I was sitting like holding my knees with my back against the wall. I had to move a few times because I was sick. Like I tried to move further away from where I was sitting because it was quite a prime spot. I was sick further away and covered it with leaves, but mostly it was just too quick. I mean, I didn't move very far. Mostly I was just sort of curled in a ball because it was pretty cold. My head felt quite wobbly. The whole point is when it gets to the end, you sort of lose consciousness. And I just sort of remember coming out of something, like snapping my head up and then realising that I probably slept or just been unconscious or something. And then I'd check the light and then just close my eyes again and listen to the music. I didn't think I would become a missing person as such. My mum goes to work at 8, so she would have been the first one. She starts at 8 and she would have been the first one to get the email. I really didn't hope for any of that. That I was going to be a missing person or any of that sort of business, or that they would phone the police. When you're in that depressive state, you're very self-involved to the point you can't really think about anything else outside. And I was on a mission. It was all going to end for me. I wasn't alert when she shouted my name. It was just like, oh, Sophie, thank God, stay there. Stay there, I'm coming down. And she had my stepdad with her. She did the jump, like the 6-foot jump, because she was so worried that I would run away or something. My friend had mentioned my running route and they'd just worked it out and gone looking. They were at the hospital soon after I arrived, the police. I was emotional. I felt guilty that I didn't deserve the treatment because I'd done it to myself. I remember they stayed with me for ages. They asked me questions about what had happened and why I'd ended up missing and would I be doing it again kind of thing. It was like 2 months, 3 months later that I went back there to that place and I went in on my own. I was quite emotional at the start. I was really nervous and anxious about going in. I was on quite high levels of antidepressants, so I couldn't cry. There wasn't any of that. I didn't stay there long. I haven't thought about being reported missing that much. I never really considered myself a missing person. Even speaking to the police, I never really thought of myself as a missing person. That's what they just classed me as at the time. And that just sort of enhanced the severity of it and the waste of resources because I'd done it to myself even though I was ill. I was a depressive who attempted suicide, a vulnerable adult. That was the label the police gave me as well, I think. I think I'm that more than a missing person.